Hi, this is Jenny Carr for Mid Morning Natters. Welcome, I'm with Marlow FM 87.8, just go with the flow. And this morning with me is Gillian Byrne. Gillian's written a marvellous pocketbook on energy and well-being. We're going to talk about that today, but she does have many, many strings to her bow, which I know inform most of the work that she does. Welcome, Gillian.
Good morning. Thank you for inviting me on, Jenny.
No problems. Now, what I'd like to talk about this morning is actually how you got involved in energy and well-being.
That's an interesting question, and I think it really goes back to my background in health, obviously related to energy and well-being, but particularly with my background as a nurse, midwife and health visitor, and something about Australia.
Tell me about Australia. That sounds very good.
It does sound interesting, but over 20 years ago, I had the opportunity to work with the Flying Doctor Service in the outback of Australia. And I think that really started my passion in health, because in those years, many years ago, I was working with very remote Aboriginal communities who were very, very healthy until the Western influence came along. So I saw very healthy people suddenly become unhealthy with the effect of, dare I say, Coca-Cola, Spam, alcohol. And suddenly that made me realise I wanted to focus on preventive health and on energy and well-being.
How fascinating. So when you met these people, I mean, we're talking 20 years ago.
We're talking, it's probably 20 years plus.
Okay, sometime.
Sometime, yeah.
People were generally leading what I would call, you know, their natural life, as it were, the life that they'd led for ages and ages, hundreds of years maybe.
Absolutely, and they certainly were very healthy until they were affected by the Western culture and the Western civilization. And the main emphasis on that for me was seeing how they were very healthy, but then became very unhealthy. So when I eventually came back to the UK, I felt that I really wanted to work in preventive healthcare, what we can do to make ourselves healthier, which is really what I focused on the last 10 years or so, very much on aspects to do with helping us be healthier at home and at work, and particularly at work being more productive and more efficient.
No, interesting. I mean, we always use the word Western civilization, don't we? Which I think possibly is a paradox. There's quite a lack of civilization and civil behaviour in the way, you know, lots of us treat our bodies, the way we have to work, the environment we work in.
And I think that really was the background on the Energy and Wellbeing pocketbook, was to see how can we put together some key messages that help us cope with the modern demands of the 21st century that we're now in, where we're all rushing around busy, 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 and not necessarily thinking about what we're eating, what we're drinking, how much exercise we're having, and how it might affect how we're productive or not during the day.
So I take it from that you're a strong believer in the mind-body link.
I am a strong believer in the mind-body link, and particularly in obviously the thoughts that go on in our mind, how that can affect how we feel, how we react, how we perform as well.
I think it's very interesting too that I know if my body is well rested, well fed, I actually work better, I'm more creative as well. So it's not just the thinking that affects my physicality, it's my physicality that affects my thinking.
Absolutely, and even if it's as simple as whether you've had a good night's sleep will make a difference to that as well.
Well, make
a huge difference.
And I was just going to say, not always as simple as you'd like it to be, as somebody whose 11-year-old woke them up with a bad dream at 4:30 this morning for half an hour. So yes, sleep can definitely make a difference. Okay. Now, I know that in the audience today, we've got a lot of young people revising for GCSEs and A-levels, and it's very easy to get the balance wrong there. I know it's very easy to do too much play and not quite enough work, but also there will be a lot of students who are doing an awful lot of work. They're crouched over the computer, and they're not really getting what I would imagine is enough exercise. How would you recommend a study regime to be run throughout the day?
Okay, and in fact, I've just been doing that over the last weekend with my niece, who's in the middle of her exam. She's halfway through them at the moment. So we were specifically working on some aspects to do with her revision, which involved mind mapping. And I know you were interviewing Tony Buzan a couple of weeks ago. But what we were doing particularly with Joanna was helping her work out a plan during the day that involved about 30 minutes, probably just 30 minutes maximum of some studying, and then she would stop for a 5 or 10 minute break. Now, she actually loves trampolining, So she's worked out that during the day she's going to have the occasional 5 or 10 minutes, literally every hour, or more frequently if she needs it, where she'll have a break away from her desk where she's busy studying, go outside, jump on the trampoline for a few moments, come back inside, even try to juggle. She may even have a little attempt at juggling as well. So one of the main things I was focusing on, Joanna, was only sitting at her desk, her work area, for 30 minutes maximum, then taking a 5 or 10 minute break. And certainly carrying on that during the morning and then having a longer, perhaps hour, over lunchtime. And then the same regime into the afternoon. She particularly doesn't like working late in the evening, so we worked out a revision plan that would take her from 9:30, so she has a little line, from 9:30 through till about 5:30, and then time off in the evening. So that was her plan.
And actually that seems fair enough, because that's the working day that most adults do.
Yeah.
I'm interested in the idea that, is it true some people are better at learning in the mornings?
Absolutely, and I think certainly one of the aspects I mention in the Energy and Wellbeing pocketbook is whether we're larks or owls.
Tell more.
And I know with my niece Joanna that she's very much more of a lark. I think in the evening time she's happier to relax and watch the TV, but the morning time is her best study time. So that was why we wanted to use her key energy time then to really focus on the information she needs to learn about. And it's quite easy to work out whether we're a lark or an owl. I think we tend to know it anyway. I know I'm much happier as a morning person than I would be late in the evening. So we need to focus on when is our best energy time, when we feel that it's easier to study, easier to think clearly, and use that time, and have our breaks at the time when we might not feel quite so energetic.
Yeah, well, you've dispelled a myth for me, because I've always been yelling at my teenagers that they should be up with the lark willy-nilly. But actually, I think at least two of them probably are night owls.
Yeah, and it may be that for them, working a little bit later in the evening, having a break from school, or having a break when they get home first of all, and then doing a couple of hours study, then having another break and doing some more study. But just making sure, I think the main thing, irrespective of whether somebody's a lark or an owl, is making sure they're only studying for 30 or 40 minutes, especially teenagers at the moment in the middle of their exams. Any longer than that, the brain desperately needs a break. One of the other things that I also mentioned to my niece Joanna is the importance of drinking water. And in fact, her mum was brilliant with us the other day when I was doing some studying with her, continually bringing water and refreshments into the room. Because by keeping the level of water up in the body, just by sipping water during studying, keeps the brain hydrated. And basically means that brain messages can pass between one brain cell and another. So just keeping your children hydrated with glasses of water and to sip the water during their study is really important.
Well, that's quite interesting, because in our family we're totally addicted to tea when we study, but water with our tea then.
Yeah, and even if you just give the children some fun water bottles so they can sip their water while they're studying, again, remembering the rule of only 30 or 40 minutes, short break, and then back to some studying again.
And that's just proven to be the length of time people can be comfortable and concentrate for?
It depends on the level of the intensity of the work. Certainly if you're thinking about children at the moment in the middle of their exams and studying, 30 to 40 minutes is really going to be the maximum. For business people, again, actually it's probably only 45 minutes to an hour. That really is the time when the brain, after that, we just need a break. I do emphasise, though, that afterwards it's only a short break. It's not an hour's break every 45 minutes, so it's just a very short mini break in between.
Okay, point taken. We don't want all these young people dashing off for an hour. So in the break then, I mean, whether one's at the computer bashing out a new project plan or, you know, at home revising, you need to actually get up and do something physical.
Absolutely, and it can be just as simple as standing up for a moment, stretching your arms up, taking a big breath of air, which is also beneficial, obviously, but it can be just a simple stretch, or it can be something more vigorous, like a child going on a trampoline or running around the garden for a few moments, or it might be, for me, I might literally just take 10 minutes to walk around the garden, breathe some fresh air, change the scenery, just give my eyes a break, as well as my body a break from leaning by the computer.
Yeah, interesting. Now, what about snacks?
Snacks, I know, that just the word snack tells us we want to graze away. Our brain does need to have regular sustenance. So the idea is that we're having healthy meals during the day, breakfast, lunch and dinner time, but we may also be somebody that needs to have snacks. So the main thing is focusing on healthy snacks. And healthy snacks, huge variety of options. Grapes, fruit, very, very good. Things like oat cakes, rice biscuits, those are very good as well. But really just thinking about finger foods, things you can eat simply and easily. For me, I guess my favourite one would certainly be fruit in the morning, fruit in the afternoon. It can be dried fruit if you're travelling. And also energy bars. Energy bars are good. Oat-based ones are much better. You do have to watch some of the sugar content on some of them.
I've noticed that, yeah. Yes. It sort of creeps up and it's got this lovely sort of healthy looking wrapper on. You flip it round and think, good Lord, 250 calories and tons of sugar.
And there are some, the ones I suppose my favourites would be the Eat Natural range. There's also some very good ones on the Food Doctor range. But I think the real focus is just the natural fruits that we can get and the seasonal ones that are available, whether it's going to be strawberries, plums, apricots, bananas, pears, apples, all of those will be really, really good to have.
Okay, so that's our working day.
I probably ought to just mention there that the occasional treat is allowed.
Oh!
So the occasional afternoon chocolate brownie is fine. It's really in moderation, so that if you're having your healthy snacks during the day, the occasional treat is really allowed.
And I like a reward at the end of something.
Absolutely.
So
yeah.
A sort of 5:30 pat on the back, well done, little brownie. I like the sound of that.
Yeah.
So we've taken the idea, Gillian, of looking at the day, breaking it into 30 or 45 minute chunks, depending on where you are. Tell me about lunch. What should we be doing at the lunch break? What to actually get peak performance, keep our energy levels high, and to feel good about ourselves?
Okay, and I think certainly what I would recommend for that peak performance is something that I call the protein power lunch. So the protein power lunch. And the protein power lunch is saying, what's our brain and our body going to need to help us be really alert for studying or working in the afternoon? And it's a very simple focus of protein, which can be fish or chicken, or it can be a pulse variety, with salad or vegetables. So at the moment we're obviously into summertime, so something like a chicken salad or a fish salad would be best of all. The great thing with a fish salad, say it's sardines or mackerel, is you're then having the oily fish, which is really high in the omega-3 oils, which are brilliant for our brains. So for a protein power lunch, chicken or fish and salad, that is easier for the body to digest. It gives your body the energy that it needs, but it also helps you for clear thinking in the afternoon. If you'd change that and had a chicken sandwich, which was protein and bread, it's not quite so easy for the body to digest those two together, and that's often why we get the afternoon sluggish feeling. So if you think of a traditional Sunday lunch, roast beef and Yorkshire puds and roast potatoes and all the vegetables, that's a traditional, real enticing you to a siesta in the afternoon. But if we're thinking of teenagers and ourselves wanting to be alert in the afternoon, our body will benefit much better by focusing on that protein power lunch, and perhaps delaying the carbohydrate till later in the day. Either a mid-afternoon snack or an evening snack is a greater way to keep our thinking much more focused.
That's very interesting, because I mean, you know, I am addicted, as probably is 80% of the British population, to the lunchtime sandwich, and I do get a bit of a lull about 3. Yeah, so that would be the result of the carbohydrate and the body actually taking all the energy to the stomach to try and digest.
Trying to digest it. And I think the other thing to be aware of now is there are other alternatives to the lunchtime sandwich, which are easy to get in all of the supermarkets around. I certainly, if I'm in a place where sandwich is the only option, I will go for a wrap, which is slightly easier to digest in the body, obviously not as high on the carbohydrate level in bread, because it's... And you can get different fillings within that as well. So you can still have a chicken wrap or a vegetable wrap. Mm. So I would opt for the wrap sandwich style instead, or just get a salad.
Right.
And wherever you are and you're eating, and if you're having to go out to buy something in different places, then it's certainly easy to get salads or snacks.
What about pasta at lunchtime? Because I know, you know, that's a very easy favourite. Yeah. People rush into an Italian and have a quick spag bol or a carbonara.
Yeah. I think the difference there is if the pasta was really just with a tomato sauce, so it's a vegetable sauce pasta, then that's going to be okay. If you're having it a serious meat-based sauce with the pasta, sometimes that can make you feel sluggish. And it very much depends on each individual. People react in different ways. I personally would find that a large pasta lunch would make me more sleepy in the afternoon. And my energy levels will be much greater if I focused on more of the protein and the salad that I mentioned earlier. And I would tend to keep my pasta lunch till the evening.
Mm. No, that's interesting. And obviously the case, because an awful lot of Italians do have a wee siesta.
Absolutely.
Or they did traditionally. Yeah. I'm not sure about that.
Of course, an afternoon siesta is very beneficial, as long as it's only up to 20 minutes. So for anybody wanting to have their little ziz in the afternoon for a few moments, absolutely fine. But keeping it to 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes maximum. Otherwise, the body clock gets all affected again.
So it's actually true. I can put my head down at 1 o'clock for, you know, till 20 past, quarter past.
And that will benefit your body during the afternoon and the evening. So straight after the radio programme, yep, that would work out very, very well indeed.
What a lovely idea. I mean, I know that teenagers tend, well, one sees, I've seen the empirical evidence, that they need more sleep, it would appear.
Absolutely, yes. They do need more sleep. And I think certainly when children are in this key stage at the moment in their studying in the middle of the exams, getting to bed early, having a really, really good night's sleep is essential. Maybe 9 hours at least that children need at this stage. But as we get into more adult life, we're not usually blessed with having so many hours of sleep. But certainly that brief pause of a little siesta, if it is possible, depending on where you are, then that does benefit the body. Oh, but I do emphasise it's a very short boost for the body.
No, I think that's a really great idea. I shall certainly think about putting it into practice from here on in. So what else are we going to do to keep peak performance? We've talked about now each day, we've talked about the eating, some of the stretching that we might do, a bit of trampolining. And I know you're very, very keen on walking.
I do. Certainly for me, one of my, I think the great thing is that walking has this interesting statistic that you exercise 250 muscles every time you're walking. Mm. And I know you recently organised that wonderful charity run anywhere, charity walking in Cookham. But for me, walking is a great thing. It's something that anybody can do. I've actually been walking on the south coast over the weekend. So walking is great. Even just walking around your garden or field or wherever space you have available. But alongside that, as you know, I teach and do Pilates. So for me, Pilates is another form of exercise. And then I row on the sea, so that's another form of exercise.
Yeah, the woman's a powerhouse.
But walking is a great thing that we can all do, and it just takes us out into the fresh air. And I think we solve many questions and concerns we have just by walking.
I know it kind of changes, literally changes the pace, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
So you can be frantic with, I don't know, trying to get a proposal together, and you go out for a walk and you actually have to go somewhere else in your head almost.
Yeah, and you almost solve the issues that you have that are concerning you just purely by walking. And in fact, after a long journey back home after the weekend last night, I did go walking, just literally for 10 or 15 minutes around the field. Except I didn't quite check out the clouds first of all, so I was caught under the rain cloud. With the cows chasing me in the field as well. So it was an interesting walk last night. Made me walk a little bit faster.
Probably one we won't all be able to replicate.
Absolutely.
Work-life balance. I've heard this a lot. I go into quite a lot of big companies, meet people, and it's kind of something that we've heard. Not every company, it would seem to me, has quite the right policy yet. But it's something very much that individuals can take charge of for themselves. And even if you do have to be in the office for 9-10 hours a day, there are various things I know that you recommend people take on.
I think really with work-life balance, it is, as you mentioned, it's a very personal thing. The main thing is I tend to focus on what we can do during the day that gives you time to relax and recharge. One of the techniques I usually advocate in some of the training courses I run is a very simple 60-second technique. I personally do the technique between Ealing Broadway Station and Paddington, and for me it just gives me, that's when I'm on the train and I can just close my eyes briefly, it just gives me a moment to relax, to recharge my body and to cope with then whatever the demands of a London day may have. And I may choose to do my 60 second technique on the way home as well. And it's just a simple technique where your eyes are closed, your eyes are still focused in front of you, but you're actually taking your eyes slowly around a clock face. And as you take them, actually I may do it with you just very briefly now.
Shall we?
Just as I'll do a brief version of it, as you go around the clock face with your eyes, you let your eyes pause at 3 o'clock. And at 3 o'clock, on the clock face, you think of your favourite holiday destination. And as you're thinking of that holiday, you're relaxed, you're breathing in lovely fresh air, you might be relaxing on a beach somewhere, but you're just in a very relaxed state of mind. And as you slowly take your eyes to 6 o'clock, you're now going to be somewhere in the water. You may be swimming in sea, you may be relaxing in a hot bath, you might be having a nice shower, or even watching people swimming in the sea. But the water is taking away the stress and the tension. And as you slowly breathe in again and breathe out, you move your eyes to 9 o'clock and you think about your favourite animals. For me, it might be my cat, it might be somebody's dog, maybe a horse. You just be amongst the animals, relaxing, just watching how they move in that very relaxed way. You're breathing in. And as you breathe out, you take your eyes up to 12 o'clock. And at 12 o'clock, you're somewhere in the countryside. It may be your garden, it may be walking in a lovely field. You're looking out at the fresh air, breathing in lovely fresh air. At the moment, you might be listening to the birds, lovely bird song. You may be smelling somebody's recently mown lawn. So you're breathing in. And as you breathe out, you slowly take your eyes back to 9 o'clock, slowly take your eyes back to 6 o'clock. And slowly back to 3 o'clock, your holiday destination. And then bring your eyes back to the centre of the clock face. And as you take that big deep breath in, breathing out any of the tension, you're hopefully ready for the day ahead.
Oh, marvellous.
And what's quite fun with that is that you have, Jenny, your own personal triggers to help you relax. The 3 o'clock was the favourite holiday. 6 o'clock was somewhere in the water, relaxing up there, somewhere swimming. The 9 o'clock is a favourite animal, and the 12 o'clock view I give is somewhere around the countryside. And you can go around that clock face at different times, ideally with your eyes closed. So obviously not if you're driving. So this exercise
yes, good plan.
If you're a passenger or if you're on a train, but I find it just gives you that 60 second moment to allow your body to relax. It also allows the endorphins, which are the happy hormones, to go through your body, which helps combat the stress hormones. So it's just allowing those endorphins, happy hormones, to go through your body.
No, marvellous. Well, you know,
so the 60 second exercise, I call it.
Give it a whirl. I think it's absolutely brilliant. And frankly, I had no desire to open my eyes whatsoever. It was absolutely fantastic. So, Gillian, you're off the train at Paddington. You've had your 60-second moment, and I have to say it was absolutely wonderful. Do try it. I can only thoroughly recommend it. And you arrive into the office, and it's a fairly bland, nondescript, unexciting desk in a reasonably open-plan space. Now, I'm not turned on by that. I don't know about you.
Yes, I can certainly buy your picture there. It's made me think, oh my goodness, I don't want to work in that environment at all. I think what's really important, whether we're working from home, whether we're in an office, whether we're children studying, the space around us has such an important impact. And depending on the constraints we may have by our desk, whoever we're working for, making that desk space work for us is really, really key. And a lot of the key things we know about keeping it clutter-free, I know we hear this word so many times, but it really does have an impact. She says, sort of glancing at her own desk there, or imagining in my mind what my desk is like at the moment. So I certainly do focus on keeping our desk as clear as possible. And I heard once a lovely story about thinking about the Antiques Roadshow test of paper, which is suitable for children or adults. Thinking about your desk area and How old is that, are some of the sheets of paper that have been on your desk, which also relates to documents within a computer? And it's like doing the Antiques Roadshow test on your desk. So are there piles of paper that have been left there for far too long and really need to be filed away, binned, recycled, delegated to somebody else? But really giving yourself a half hour, a week if possible, spring clean of that desk to clear the space. The other reason why that's so important is in our peripheral vision, we're taking on everything around us. So if we're trying to focus on our studying, our work project, our preparing a presentation, whatever it is we're doing, our eyes will be affected by everything around us. So we really need to try and keep that space as clear as possible. But that also means underneath the desk and the filing tray that can become very, very high. So keeping it clutter-free clears our thinking and helps you really just focus on what you need to do.
Yeah, I know. Certainly if I have my diary on the side of my desk, my eye's constantly drawn to it if I'm trying to write a letter or, you know, do an article or whatever. Yeah. And that can be very irritating, so I do try and shove that in the drawer now.
And that can also relate to the flashing sign that tells you an email has come on, or the person that likes to have post-its all around their computer screen. So where possible, keeping it clear and having the project that you're working on, obviously that's the one that's going to be in your vision.
Mm. No, I think that's very interesting. What about things like photographs, plants? You know, what I know that you've done is feng shui?
Feng shui, yes. I mean, certainly plants are really beneficial. Healthy green plants take away the harmful ions, as they're called, from computers and electrical equipment. So if you can have healthy plants around you, depending on the office environment, that really can make an impact. But also just thinking about what you can see from your desk, whether you can look out onto trees, whether you have natural daylight, whether you're under lights that are fluorescent lights, obviously not ideal. So the focus there is on natural daylight, thinking about the lighting around your computer, thinking about plants, healthy plants around you. And if you do have all the pictures of the family and loved ones and pets, etc., keeping it to just a few, because otherwise that's going to distract your vision quite a bit.
It's interesting about the light, and that kind of takes me a little bit back to the students and the night owls.
Yeah.
I've certainly turned down jobs in the past where I wouldn't have had a window, because personally I need daylight. Is it that the brain functions better, and as it, human beings, we actually feel better with natural daylight?
Absolutely, and certainly if you're working, I know I've worked in companies where they're in a basement where there's no light at all, and there I can just see your body reaction to that, because it really does affect us quite a lot. So ideally we want to have daylight, as much natural lighting as possible. But if you have to work in a basement area where lighting's not ideal, then certainly at lunchtime you need to make sure that you're having a break outside. And sometimes when I'm running training courses on energy and well-being, where the training room may happen to be in a basement, where there might not be daylight, then I will make sure I plan in more frequent breaks, and certainly encourage people at lunchtime to take a walk outside into the fresh air. So it's actually outside the daylight that really does help your body work much more efficiently.
Is that to do with the vitamin D?
It's to do with the vitamin D, but it's also just allowing your eyes a break away from the computer. Mm. And people that have dry, itchy eyes, sometimes it's because you're working at a computer too intensely and also not drinking enough water, that I know we mentioned earlier. Mm. So I would just encourage people to, wherever they are at the moment and wherever their desk area is, just to think about their desk, take a look at it from perhaps an outsider's point of view. Would they be embarrassed if somebody looked at it at the moment? Is it fairly clear? Is it tidy? And just thinking during the day, how many times are they taking a moment to breathe in some fresh air and to look outside and to get that natural daylight in and natural fresh air in as well?
Mm. Now, interestingly, I know this is a little bit off topic, but where you are in relation to the door, I think, is quite key, isn't it?
Yes, I mean, that's certainly an aspect of feng shui, which when you're bringing it into a business environment, just simply how you position yourself on your desk, around your desk, to make sure that you can see the door and that you've not got people walking behind you that you don't know, because that's really where it comes from.
Because that's quite disquieting, actually. Absolutely. So you've got a sort of through corridor behind your desk.
And obviously this is quite a challenge in open plan areas. So what I personally did, I have an office at home, which means that I can design it how I wanted to. But in an office situation, just making sure I either change my chair position so I can face towards the door or at least see people coming around me can make a difference.
Mm. No, I can well imagine that, actually. It's quite uncomfortable if you don't know somebody's coming up behind you.
Yeah, and sometimes it's just as simple as, is it possible to move the position of the desk slightly or where the computer is or the chair so that you feel that you've got more support behind you, which can be from a wall or from a screen, rather than hearing people going by and not really knowing what's happening.
I know. I can see the difficulty on that one.
Yeah.
So what would be your sort of few top tips for our students, for people maybe creating a new workspace or people who are feeling a bit stressed out with work and so on? You know, if you had to give half a dozen
Tips, okay. I think really these would be the tips that within the Energy and Wellbeing Pocketbook, and they're also the ones that I focus on in some training courses for companies and individuals on helping us feel energetic. One tip would absolutely be water. Would be sipping water during the day, not necessarily gulping it, just sipping throughout the day. For me, when I'm running training courses, I actually sip, as I am now actually, on hot water with a slice of lemon and a slice of ginger. So that's my favourite one, but just water is a brilliant top tip. So that would be one of the ones I would focus on. The second one would be to think about the snacks that I was having during the day. Have I had my official 5 or so pieces of fruit and vegetables? But just thinking about what am I eating that's going to help my brain and help my body. Thirdly, I would definitely focus on having a break at least every 30 minutes, standing up, moving your position, perhaps having a phone call standing, which also helps. And within that break, taking a chance to look outside, breathe in some fresh air, just let your eyes focus on something different. So having a break would be a key one. I think I definitely have to advocate the 60-second.
Oh, yes.
60-second exercise, just to help you relax just for a moment to recharge.
Yeah.
And also, I think the final one we haven't really mentioned, is just breathing. Because in busy, busy days, we can be dashing around madly, as I know we all are. But just taking a moment to pause, sometimes I call it pressing the remote control on your video. Just taking a moment to pause, your video, your DVD player, whatever, but taking a moment to pause and take a breath in. And perhaps occasionally taking a longer breath out just helps you refocus, recharge yourself for whatever is ahead of you.
Yes, and I think it's almost that consciously breathing.
Absolutely,
that
yeah.
kind of gives a perspective on, you know, what seems absolutely critical. And then you slow down, take the breath, and it actually, kind of helps you rebalance, doesn't it, what's going on.
And in that rebalancing, you're also just acknowledging, which is something we mentioned earlier on, about your energy times of the day. Thinking about, you know, when are your peak energy times, and using those for the tasks that really do need that energy. So where you're perhaps not feeling at your best, you may not be buzzing around madly, then that's the time to do the tasks that might not need your energy to be quite so alert.
Yeah, interesting. Now, as a person, you obviously work with companies.
Yes, I do, yeah.
Who want to improve the health, energy and well-being of their employees. And with people?
Yes, I work with individuals and companies. So with companies, I tend to run seminars or workshops, which can either be over lunchtime, half a day or a full day, on helping employees perform better. So thinking about how we can create energy and well-being within their working situation that's going to help the performance of the company. But then also within individuals, on a one-to-one basis, coaching them on a health-wise aspects about nutrition and health and exercise that can help improve their health.
How can we get in touch with you?
You can get in touch with me via my website, and my company is Health Circles. So the website is the three W's, www.healthcircles.co.uk. And that's circles with an S, healthcircles.co.uk, and via my telephone number. My office number, local number, 01628 666 069. That's 01628 666 069. And of course, I'd be delighted if anybody wanted to buy the Energy and Wellbeing Pocketbook, which they can get via the website. It's also available through Management Pocketbooks.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much. I'm feeling energised, and I'm definitely going to take you up on the 60-second exercise. I think it's fantastic. Do try it any moment of stress, except when driving, and keep